Well, hey, and welcome. This is for the early birds. I thought I'd join you for a minute or two before we're official. I hope you're all doing great. I hope you enjoyed our first seminar. Any questions? There are a couple of things I want to respond to, and thank you each for those of you who have sent in responses to my two questions and the suggestions of what would be most helpful. But first, any follow-up, clarifications or questions or comments about anything as you've had a chance to mull over our initial seminar? What you got? Well, I'll prime the pump and begin if nobody wants to jump in. A couple of you have mentioned in responses to my two questions and after the initial seminar that this series focuses on writing a first nonfiction book, but that you were and are thinking about doing a fiction book. Well, you're not in the wrong place. These principles and this systematic way to address the four seminar topics, the art, the craft, the science, and the business of writing your first book, is applicable to your fundamental engagement with writing, whatever it is you decide to write about. So this is why, for me, this is the initial seminar series at the beginning of a new calendar year, because it's the framework of the remaining seven seminar series that I drew in this format through CTA through 2024. Each builds on the other and is really about writing your own story, personally, business, professionally, performance, and the application in various areas. The next one, I think, is going to be on wellness. So the point of view of any writing is your reader. The point of view of each session and engagement is your client. So this experience of empathically engaging with your reader kind of parallels the empathic resonance and understanding of your client. And as we know from coaching and writing, a common suggestion is show, don't tell. And similarly, evoke, don't inform. We know that data, facts, information don't change people's minds. They're not ways that we learn. So we co-create a new experience with someone in a very different way. Here's a reference I have. I'll mention a couple of the most basic books for writing a book proposal, which is going to be useful whatever ways you decide to publish. We'll cover 9 or 10 of those in the last seminar, The Business of Writing. But this is something that I think you'll find useful throughout. It's a fairly recent book by a guy named Peter Gelfand, G-E-L-F-A-N. And it's a very readable book. He's a very established writer, teacher. His book is called Hurling Words into Darkness, A Book Doctor's Dose of Brain Science for Writers. And he addresses some very powerful and fundamental aspects of writing that can be helpful. He recently edited my most recent book manuscript, now with an agent, so I got to know him even a little bit better. I'm going to send you guys, I didn't get back to my office in time to do it today. I was planning to do it before the class, but I'll do it first thing tomorrow. There's a white paper that I've done on the brain science of story, and I'll send it to you to look at some things maybe in a little bit more detail and a little bit different perspective than we're developing here. So I hope it'll be useful to you if you have time to read it. So, again, thanks for the responses to the two questions that I sent, or what you'd most like to focus on, what you'd most like to walk away with. Any other comments, questions, or thoughts before we move into the lecture mode where you're going to be dark, where your mic will be turned off? So anything that might be helpful to talk about now? any clarifications or questions from our first seminar? I hear someone talking, but you're like three rooms away. Can you do something to your microphone to adjust if you can? Well, I'll come back. If there's no comments or questions, I'll come back and reserve a bit of time at the end of this seminar for discussion. I'm very interested in your thoughts and questions and comments. Feel free to send them to me in email, and I really welcome, as many of you have done, to send responses to those questions. So hold on. I'm going to put us on lecture mode. Okay, we're going to talk about the craft of writing in this seminar. You really learn to do something by doing it. Writing is no different. You learn to write by producing a certain number of words on a regular basis. You become an author by rewriting. And Mark Twain put this very simply. He said, writing's easy. All you have to do is cross out the wrong words. So, you already know, those of you who have had any contact with me whatsoever, that you are the author of your life story, of everything that you think and feel and experience you create each moment. You're the author of your written story. So here are some reflections as we talk about the craft of writing. What do you do uniquely well better than anyone else? Who's your audience? When you set your writing goals, be clear about three things: what your readers need from you, what you want to offer them, and what things you think you understand that you want to convey to the reader. So first, let's consider understanding your motivation for publishing. I have 12 and counting, okay? And I think these are in the outline is annotated. I hope you've printed it and have it to go along with this so you don't have to worry about taking notes. People write for many different reasons. Here are some: to disseminate your knowledge, experience, and message to readers, as a gift to clients. These are not mutually exclusive, by the way. As a premium with some other offer, such as an ebook as a bonus for subscribing to a series or a workshop. To publish with a traditional house using an agent to establish a national or international presence as an author. To make money by selling your book yourself. To use your book to make money for other services and products. To establish yourself as an expert. As a springboard for seminars, workshops, presentations, retreats. To make a difference in people's lives. In our own small way, we want to change the world. Here's how Tom Stoppard, one of my very favorite playwrights, put it. Words are sacred. They deserve respect. If you get the right ones in the right order, you can nudge the world a little. And 12, to leave a legacy. Here's how the dedication of one such book was a memoir on parenting sounds. To Ryan and Lauren, I hope there will be a time when you will find at least some of this book interesting, though if I've done a good job of parenting, not revealing anything new. I don't know whether or if it will be tomorrow or a dozen years of tomorrows from now. Know that whenever it is, I will be loving you. May you walk through all your days with love remembered and love renewed. Dad. That's from a book called Making Memories, Reflections on Parenting from the Heart of a Father and the Mind of Psychoanalyst. I'll use it as an example of one publishing option. I mentioned it briefly last time about the writer's retreat. Now, to consider something that may seem elusive to you, but yet is so commonplace, voice. definite voice is conversational voice. The writer gives us a sense that we're listening to an empathic storyteller, a skilled raconteur, rather than simply looking at words on paper. Voice is simply the impression the writing gives of the storyteller. It's inevitable. It will happen regardless, so it may be something you want to be aware of. This is different from the simple advice, write the way you talk. Voice involves more than accurate transcription. A true essence of conversation comes from attentive listening and dedicated revision. Transcribing talk is not writing, but it's one technique to help cultivate voice. Some writers, and I know him very well, speak into digital recorders to let their voices flow, hear themselves at the same time, to have an audience that I envision and speak to them directly. So one step in your editing process is to read your words out loud. Then you can recast a word or sentence that doesn't sound right. Barbara McClintock, awarded a Nobel Prize for her study of gene transposition in corn plants, said she made her discoveries by listening to what the corn told her. She described respecting the life and presence of the corn, and as she put it, letting it come. She said she learned the stories of the plants. She heard them. She watched their daily green journeys of growth and came to know the plants in the way a healer or mystic would have known them, from the inside, by hearing the inner voice of corn speaking to her as another being. Now, even in previously contributing to the psychoanalytic literature on empathy as a scientific way of listening, it never occurred to me that an ear of corn had much to say. And I suspect that if I mused out loud to a colleague that some vegetables were talking to me, they'd call the guys in the white coats. For Barbara, though, it was a true exchange. From the perspective of voice, consider this short passage. I think you'll hear it immediately. I use this passage, which also fits with my philosophy of coaching, as a preface for my last book written as a psychoanalyst, Integrating Body, Self, and Psychological Self. This passage is from Anatoly Broillard's Intoxicated by My Illness. Listen to how he puts it. My ideal doctor, I can imagine entering my condition, looking around it from the inside like an ideal landlord with a tenant, trying to see how he could make the premises more livable. He would look around holding me by the hand, and he would figure out what it is like to be me. And he would try to find certain advantages in the situation. He can turn disadvantages into advantages. He would see the genius of my illness. He would mingle his demon with mine. We would wrestle with my fate together like Rupert and Birkin in the library and D.H. Lawrence's Women in Love. I would also like a doctor who enjoyed me. I want to be a good story for him, to give him some of my art in exchange for his. If we have any time at the end, there are a couple of other passages that I want to read from you that are really outstanding examples of voice to me. So let's look back to the craft and creating a system to design every part of your book. So we'll revisit these in the book outline, but these are just some overview comments. The title, 5 words or less that tells and sells. I'll tell you more about why 5 words or less in just a minute. The subtitle, the promise, the benefits described. Look at the subtitle of any nonfiction book, and it captures the benefits the readers will get when they read that book. And this is for the author, a silver bullet, a clear, sharply focused description of your book that can be recited in a very brief overview, clear, brief, and succinct. It would clearly explain what your book is about, why it's special, and elaborate just a little bit on the subtitle, the benefits that somebody's going to get when they read it. Think about a mission statement, a maybe 7 to 9 word statement of the purpose of your book, kind of like a hub statement for your book. The back cover. Think about writing this before you write your book. It's a compelling ad copy of the benefits to the reader, and you're engaging the reader who's going to probably flip to the back cover before they ever open the book. The book introduction. This is the problem you address for your audience, why you wrote the book, its purpose, its benefits, and how you'll present it. It's the introduction of the book, the whole topic, but it's also the initiation of your introduction of yourself to the reader to let the reader know what it's going to be like to do this journey together. The table of contents, so that you'll have the scope, the overview map of what you're doing. The book outline, we'll talk about that in just a bit. And then maybe a query letter, even if you're not sending it to an agent. A lead, body, bio, and close. It will help you conceptualize an overview and intended impact of your book, even if you don't plan to use an agent. So, let's look at the nonfiction book proposal specifically. Now, why is this important? Even if you don't plan to submit to a traditional publishing house, the reason, I believe, is that the book proposal is the business plan of your book. It's the blueprint. You need to know where you're going. Goals and strategies. Setting a goal can enhance and focus motivation. Establishing strategies will facilitate focus. And if you don't know where you're going, any map will do. You should have the end in mind from the beginning. Lewis Carroll said this really well and really succinctly. Alice came to a fork in the road. "Which road do I take?" she asked. "Where do you want to go?" asked the Cheshire Cat. "I don't know," Alice answered. Then said the cat, "It doesn't matter." Developing an organizing idea with a substantial center is what your book's about. What is your book about specifically, in a few words? Why does it exist? You'll communicate both of these notions again and again in various ways throughout your book, so it's useful to have them clear in your mind so that you can orbit around them, develop the title, subtitle, the headline sentences, the chapter subtitles, all will be the essence of your book. So the nonfiction book proposal is a tool to help you organize and evaluate your concept of a book. Another purpose of the proposal, if you decide to go with a publisher, is to tell a publisher about your book, why it's important, why you're the one to write it, why it will be successful. So, a good book starts with a good idea. The book's merit should address these issues. Why would somebody want to read your book? Who's your target audience? What is your unique hook? Can the hook and the message support an entire book? What will I be telling my readers that they don't already know? So, let's look at these components of a book outline. And again, whatever you decide to do in publishing, even if you self-publish, this is still important because it's your organization, your overview, and it will help you develop things in a more systematic way. First, the title and subtitle. The title should contain no more than 5 words. That's a principle, not a rule. Why is that, you ask? Well, a longer title requires the reader to think instead of feel. The title should create a motivating visualization. We know that more people think in pictures, over 70%, and learn in a visual way than auditory and kinesthetic combined. So the title should trigger positive images, not negative ones. Its focus should also be positive rather than negative, because that establishes the frame of a mindset to process everything else of new information about the book. Neuroscience tells us we get what we focus on, not what we want. And the title, I believe, has to pass the airplane test. This is my personally devised test that came to me spontaneously when a publisher asked me to write a blurb for a dust jacket of the book. I'd known the publisher, and I knew the author, and I was excited to do it. I said, what's the title? He told me, and I said, you know, I'll be happy to do this if it has a different title, but that one doesn't pass the airplane test. He said, okay, Dave, what's the airplane test? I said, I'm on an airplane. Somebody sees the book I'm reading. I don't want to be embarrassed or ashamed. I don't want it to be some diagnosis or something goofy that they're going to look at me funny. I don't want to have to worry about that. She said, I think that makes sense. And he sent me the manuscript with a revised title. It worked. It became a bestseller. And I passed that on, the airplane test. And there are exceptions to everything. Here's one exception to the rule of five words or less for a title to process in the emotional brain rather than the intellectual brain. This is the title of a bestseller by child and adolescent psychologist Dr. Anthony Wolf. Get out of my life, but first could you drop me and Cheryl off at the mall? Bestseller, promise you. Two, the overview. A compelling overview of your book, 1 to 2 pages in length, should communicate what your book is about and show the essential worth and marketability of a book rather than a magazine article or a newspaper story. It also is your plan for what you're going to convey. It should be a clear, concise statement of some basic elements: what your book's about, why it should be written, how you're going to write it, and why you're the best person to write it. Three, markets. The first question an agent will ask you if you go this route is, what's your platform? That means, how many people do you have who follow you, who are interested in and willing to pay for what you write? And the first question that agent asks is because that's the first question that the publisher is going to ask the agent. What's his or her platform? So think about how you're going to market your book, because the most prestigious publisher in the world is going to expect you to market the book. What they do is going to be contributory, but it's not the nucleus of it. If you might be interested in this, it's a lengthy thing. I'll be happy to send you a copy of my last book proposal, just to give you an idea of one way of doing this. If you're interested in this, I'll come back to this later. Four, the competition. This is where you have looked at books that are directly competitive with yours, compare yours to theirs, and do just a very brief analysis of what yours offers that they don't, what will support your book's existence. The marketing promotion, I should combine these, three and five. The promotion is all that you're going to do to help promote your book, including all the avenues from virtual to actual promotion, you know, blogs, podcasts, news, all the things that you do in every realm. Another is the author's background. You don't have to have written books before, but what your experience and expertise is that relates to the book and why this makes you uniquely qualified to write it. Next, the chapter outline. And this, I know this is kind of boring, but this is just the basics of a structure of the book, the blueprint. And the chapter outline is really the nucleus of the blueprint for your book. It's a short paragraph about what each of the chapters, maybe a paragraph about if you have two or three sections, what the section's about. And then a sample chapter, usually the first chapter. And if you send it to an agent, then it's going to be an indication of how you can contribute to this subject. So think about any nonfiction book that you picked up recently, and when you look at the first chapter, it begins with a story, a powerful story to engage the reader to capture the essence of the book's message. Look at any good-selling nonfiction book that is of any interest to you whatsoever. If you can, you may be able to do this on Amazon without having to go up to the Barnes & Noble and mask up before you go in. Look at the first chapter. It will begin with a story, I guarantee you. So this book proposal is not just a sales tool. Again, it's your blueprint. It's an essential tool for you as a writer, your game plan, your superstructure. It can serve as a map for you because it helps you to think about and articulate the meaning of your book and what it's about, how you're going to organize it. And it can create the kind of confidence to know that you're the person to write it. So this is not the fun, the creative part, but this is part of the work. The other part of work is editing. We'll come back to that. Now, here are, I believe, the two best books for writing a book proposal. Pick one of them and get it, at least. One is by Michael Larsen, L-A-R-S-E-N, How to Write a Book Proposal. There have been some revisions recently, but it's fundamental. Of these two, my favorite, by Jeff and Deborah Herman, Write the Perfect Book Proposal. And I like this one because it shows a number of proposals that were sent in to agents and publishers that actually worked, that books were published. So it gives you a good example in highlighting different sections, not the whole thing. So let's look now at 7 Habits of Successful Writers. And again, all this is arbitrary, but I want to convey something to you so at least to have a place to begin and develop. One is to create a specific plan, including your schedule for writing. Stick to that plan, no matter what. Sometimes one of the most important things in life, as well as in writing, is to show up. This schedule, simply a writing plan, doesn't have to be detailed or onerous. It may look like some version of any of these possibilities. I'll write for 2 hours, 5 weekdays, each week between 8 and 10 p.m. Another, I'll draft 500 words of writing each day for 5 days a week. Another, I will create 2 chunks a week. We'll come back to that. I will create an outline of the book by fill in the date. I will create an annotated outline by fill in the date. Focusing on a simple, specific action plan sets up the best potential for your effectiveness and mastery. And that may include a structure of a specific time, specific days of the week that you stick to. Divide up your work. Focus on and complete one thing at a time. There's always something you can focus on. Here's an example of that. During my specialty training in psychiatry, one of the first-year supervisors had a puzzling picture on the wall, a photograph in which everything seemed curiously out of focus. I met with him every week for supervision. I'd look at the photograph. Finally, toward the end of the year, I mustered up the courage to ask him about it. He said, "Look carefully. What do you see?" I walked over to the photograph to get a closer look. Closer didn't help. It still seemed out of focus. I saw no particular aesthetic value in it. My experience and considerable interest in photography did not help. I said, Steve, the only thing I notice is there's only one branch of one tree in focus in the entire picture. I mean, that was all I could money. He said, that's exactly why I have it hanging there. It's my reminder that while things seem confusing and blurry, there's always at least one thing you can focus on and see more clearly, which is why he was a great supervisor for first-year residents. Two, when you write, write. Don't combine writing and editing. Two different mindsets, two different parts of the brain. When you shift, it takes cognitive energy. You can't do both at the same time. Plan separate times for each task. Three, take one step at a time. Have a small, specific, definable goal. You know this from coaching. Maybe write in small bursts. The first draft may be done at various times, bit by bit, or compilated by several stacks of pages from different times. Here's an example of another example of a focus and shrinking the focus to a next step. Terry Fox ran the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Because he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He managed about 24 miles a day and completed the run in 143 days. He was asked at the end in an interview, how did he keep going when he was exhausted and knew he had thousands of miles ahead? He said, I just kept running to the next telephone pole. Now, he knew where, at the end of the Marathon of Hope, he knew where the telephone poles ended. So he had a goal in mind, but that allowed him just to focus on the next step. Four, find your most effective way of writing and stick to it. And for some of you, it may be the computer where you see words appear on the screen. For some, it may be writing longhand on a yellow pad. Or if you're a talker and like to envision the person you're speaking to or an audience, talking into a dictation device, uploading it. I upload mine to iDictate. They do the transcript for a penny and a quarter word and send it back to me. Do what fits your learning and creativity style. Also, pay attention to your best time of the day for your creative process of writing and the best time of the day for the more objective work of editing. Pay attention to your biorhythms. That's important. In Texas, it sounds like this. It's easier to ride a horse in the direction it's going. Five, read your work out loud. This can be a very effective element in editing, a way of listening on another level. If possible, join a writer's group to hear your work and other work read, perhaps by others. When I told you when I did the very different book about parenting, I spent some time at the Iowa Writers Workshop, and I learned as much from that group as I did from the well-known author who conducted it. I've also done a couple of writers' workshops more locally. One, the last one I did, had a different approach. Instead of us reading, the instructor would not let any of us read our own stuff because we know where to pause. We know how it should sound. It helped us as well as everyone else when someone who was totally unfamiliar with it would read it. It forced objectivity. And that was an interesting way of proceeding as well. So all of those things can be helpful. You just have to find what may fit your style. Do adequate research. Effective writers know that good research is about pursuing questions and information of themselves and for themselves. Books, websites, reports, interviews. One way that I get a great deal of information is to have Google Alerts send me. I type in the phrase, and you guys know this, if it's more than two or more words you want to put in quotes. Type in the phrase you want information about, and if you elect this, you'll get once a day an email of all the topics anywhere in the world literature online that is about that subject. And it would be books, articles, research, even blogs. That's how blogs go viral, so that you can look at what other people are doing, follow and track them, but it's all kind of information, and you can just look because there's the title of whatever article or book it is, a sentence or two that's a summary, and a link. If it appeals to you, you know, one effective way of doing it is to click on it, copy it, and stack it up so that you can review all the things that are related at a single time rather than being distracted and going to an article when you are in the business part of your day. So that's a way to stay relevant. And each of you will have a way of getting immersed in your writing to get present and to really get grounded and centered to enter whatever state it is you're wanting, a creative state for writing. We'll talk more about that at another time. And finally, read the writing of others. We learn by reading. Read what instructs as well as what stimulates. Read from other related fields. Stretch yourself. You'll find your own best balance for reading and writing. Now, let's talk for just a bit about the top six mistakes successful writers avoid. Think about that for a moment. What is a mistake that you think you may need to avoid that you begin to recognize now in your writing? This is not a negative framework, but it's a look at framing, recognizing and owning what you feel may be a mistake or limiting, to look at what's the opportunity here? What's the challenge? Think about it for just a moment. Write it down. Here are six more common mistakes. And some of this, you'll form your your own judgment about this. Avoid passive sentence construction. As you reread and edit your work, convert passive verbs into action language whenever possible. Be clear, simple, specific, and humane. These are the four qualities that William Zinsser in The Art of Writing says are the essence of writing. These also happen to be the essence not only of good writing, but of good speaking. Clarity, brevity, simplicity, humanity. Significant work goes into keeping it simple and making it look easy. Keep the burden of clarity of communication yourself. Don't shift it to the reader or the listener. 3, show, don't tell your audience. Use stories and metaphors, combining a good story, the right brain, with pointing out the story's lesson and meaning, the left brain, enhances both sides for a balanced learning. People accept more readily ideas when their minds are in story mode. We know this from brain science, as opposed to a more analytical mindset. Melville didn't write a story about whaling. He wrote a unique action dialogue drama between one guy and one fish. Stories are how we understand and how we remember. Our brain is hardwired for stories. James Watson, the scientist who with Crick discovered DNA, said, you know, I can remember something when I can fit it into a story. A story is a system not only for understanding, but for holding together facts. A story makes things make sense. Lawyers know this. Little kids standing next to broken vases know this. Muriel Rukeyser said, "The world is made up of stories, not atoms." 4. Keep the I to a minimum in order to acknowledge and engage your reader. Like you know from coaching, anytime you shift from your client's story to anything that's about you, especially advice, information, experience, you risk that shift away from the story that's being developed, your client. 5, lose the jargon and the fancy phrases. Hemingway believed that 1 to 2 syllable words work better than long ones. So what this means is not trying to impress your audience with your intellect or vocabulary or research. Your reader wants a savvy friend who explains things in a down-to-earth way and who also, by the way, happens to be an expert. 6, be a good storyteller. When you carefully craft a speech or tell a story, the art is in evoking the emotional response from the listener or reader. So rather than expressing yourself or telling what the receiver's reaction should be or telling them how they should feel, you engage the reader and enable the reader to have that experience and come to their own conclusions. What we know from, this is one of the later courses from neuromarketing, is it's not what someone hears from a seller that makes them decide to buy something. It's what they say to themselves as a result of what the seller says that will determine what they do next. So we can learn from the poets who offer their art to the reader or listener as a doorway to their own experience. One of the storytellers I studied with, which was one of the initial mentors I had when I made my transition to mentor coaching, told of an experience he had when going through O'Hare in Chicago. He was coming back from a presentation he did, and a woman stopped him to say how much she enjoyed his presentation 4 or 5 years before that, and how it had stayed with her all that time. He asked her to remind him what he had talked about. She said, "Oh, you know, I don't remember what you talked about, but I'll always remember that story you told." So here's an exercise, a chunking exercise. A chunk is a piece of writing, maybe about the size of a newspaper column, that looks at a single subject. So here's one possibility, an exercise. Write a single chunk about what you want to focus on. Treat the single subject in a complete self-contained way. Now, this may be a story, an anecdote, a vignette, an exercise, a description of an event, a complete thought, a case study, and it needs to be on the subject related to your book. Once you have the subject of your book in mind and those chapter outlines, titles, and summaries, you're going to begin to see things manifest. You've cued your radar to recognize things that may be related. So, you know, I would say, this is a wardrobe change moment, okay? I would consider advising you to wear cargo shorts or cargo pants as a rider. You can go almost anywhere with them nowadays, but what you can do in that bottom cargo on either leg is put a little moleskin or a little thing called field notes, a little memo book, and a pen So whenever you're out walking, whenever you're sitting and waiting, whenever you're in a restaurant after you've ordered, and you're not with somebody where you need to pay attention, but you will begin to have all kinds of things. I worked on the I captured the title and the subtitle for a book that was so elusive that I'm working on currently. I'll tell you more about my process for that during the retreat that I spent several weeks in the fall writing in New Orleans while I was waiting for brunch to be served. I nailed it during that time because I happened to have my little field notes with me. We'll return to that unless I hear massive groans, okay? So the first exercise, write a single chunk. Treat the subject in a complete self-contained way. And it's a subject related to your book. That's a repetition. Second exercise, write four more chunks. Whatever period of time, don't let it just happen or wait till you're inspired, because that's not the way people write. But you will see the chunks of the building blocks of nonfiction books. Third exercise, fit your chunks into your outline. See what the chunks illuminate or describe to further a section or a specific chapter of your book. Fourth exercise, plan a month of writing. After you've written five chunks, fitted them into the outline, you may want to revise your outline. After revision, decide what chunks to write next. For these, you'll be more aware of what you want to write and can make a writing schedule. So, in an overview now, I want to move through this and get to having just a bit of time for discussion. Some important areas to focus your writing. One, the mission statement of your book. Now, in business, a mission statement is an organization's primary purpose, the strategies to achieve that purpose, and its fundamental values. A personal mission statement can clarify and give meaning to your daily activities to add focus and commitment. So, consider a mission statement for your book, and a mission statement contains four elements: ideals, purpose, strategies, and goals. Ideals, the core values that motivate and guide you, defining the important elements of what you're going to convey in your book. Purpose, what you want to accomplish, the benefits the reader gets that will be consistent with the ideals, the values. Strategy, the art and science of a plan of action. This has to do with how you'll conceive, craft, and deliver your book, your writing plan, the blueprint. And goals, you guys work with these every day, SMART goals, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, time-bound, now applied to your writing. So create a mission statement for yourself as a writer. It can guide you. It can remind you of what you are meant to do. This can become a compass to guide your story to completion and fulfillment. Write it down. Look at it each time before you begin writing. Think about what your plot is as a person, as a professional, as a writer. That's different than a mission statement. I'll share my plot: to live, love, contribute, and play with absolute passion. So look at your mission statement, your plot. Develop these things, a business plan for your book, which is the book proposal. A timetable. This is an overview, but it's kind of nailing it a little bit more. A timetable, a calendar of completion of each aspect of your book, a daily or at least weekly schedule, your writing office, the space of your own, as Virginia Woolf emphasized, a room of one's own that is specifically associated with your creative writing, your tools. Have everything there that you need. Continuing education in writing, in your subject matter and in marketing, in the art and the science of all things related to what you're writing about, and possibly a writer's group. Every time I've been active in one, it's been a huge leap in my writing. I don't do it anymore, but I think it has value at certain points that can be immensely valuable to you, because you also have to come up with something new every week for the group or embarrass yourself. So that's also a little bit of a help. Now, just to close on your belief systems, and you guys know this, if you want to change your life, first change your mind. How do you do an inventory of beliefs that may be limiting or compromising? It's sort of analogous to impressionistic painting. Each of your experiences is a dab of paint on a pointless canvas. Only when you step back and view the entire picture do you recognize that the points form a pattern of a particular segment of life, that the segments have their own unity. You create each experience, the patterns, the composite image. Each is a different level of awareness. If you really want to catalyze that process, engage a mentor coach. Think about, that's what we do in coaching. We focus on the process, that 90 to 95% of someone's operating system that's not conscious. And you know from working with clients, every algorithm that's important, that has anything to do with present behavior, cognition, feeling, attachment, all the kinds of patterns that our brains are wired for, those will show themselves in the relationship with you, the coach. This is what you can be aware of with yourself. It may be helpful to have a catalyst of a mentor coach. You may do it in various ways. You may have already done it. But this is especially useful now as you're thinking of yourself as a writer. You're always free to change your mind, free to change your beliefs and core assumptions about who and what you are. Changing your mind not only alters your brain, but transforms your life. You guys know this from coaching. This is our profession. But first you have to be aware. Prediction, expectation are based on past that create repetition. But when based on the present and the future, then prediction and expectation create possibilities. So a belief system constructs an obstacle or an opportunity. So consider this. How you frame something determines the mindset you use to process it. To say that a different way, what you seek is camouflaged in what you fear. Show me an obstacle, I'll show you a desire. For example, show me clutter, I'll show you blocked energy that desires release. We always create the outside to match the inside. The secret here is that an obstacle is the unconscious mnemonic of desire. It reminds you of what you want, but it may make it safe to want if you're afraid. Now, here's an example. I saw a cartoon of a dog straining at its leash, barking relentlessly at a cat, as if to say, just let me at him. Now, the next frame, the cat was actually not too shabby, bigger and meaner looking than the dog. And the dog was free, though, to bark ferociously, straining at its leash, just let me at him. The next frame, the leash snapped. So the dog was free to go after the cat. And the dog looked astonished, terrified, scared to death. He quickly ran back, grabbed the leash, tied a triple knot. Then he could again strain safely to bark his ferocious, just let me at him. So here's the coaching principle. When you find yourself focusing on an obstacle, for example, I can't find time to write, reflect on the underlying desire. And here's the essence from a coaching perspective. When you're ready to consider that you create the obstacle, you're also ready to consider the possibility of not creating it. Imagine what it would be like not to create your obstacles. We're in discussion mode now, if you'll manage the background noise. I'm interested in thoughts or questions about anything that we've just talked about. If this makes sense to you, if you have questions or clarifications. If you'll say your name when you add or ask. What's, in maybe just a sentence, what's the most important thing to you that you're taking away from this discussion this evening? I think it would be helpful for others to hear as well.
Hello, David. Danny Bedoni, and hello to everybody. Not to create the obstacle. That we have the power to create it or not. And that's,
okay.
that blew my mind, so thank you.
Great, okay. Thank you. Very, very good. Who else? Here's why.
Hi, Dave.
Yes, go ahead. This is
Dubai from the Washington, D.C. area. How are you doing?
Welcome. Great. How are you?
Good. Fine. Everything is good. I'm really enjoying this. I have a question, and then I'll share what I got. When you were talking about the single chunks, which was a great idea for me, I was wondering what constitutes a chunk? A word, the number of words, the number of the minutes or time you're working on it.
Well,
a chunk is a
unique literary term conceived of in Texas, and particularly around the Houston area. But a chunk is a piece of writing that you treat some subject that may be, that you write about it, again, just writing, not worrying about editing, you write about something maybe as long as anywhere from a blog to a magazine article, a few to several paragraphs that you, even a chunk has a beginning, middle, and end. You know, we talk about a story that, and this is a way that you might be able to think about a chunk. Every story has three components: the challenge, the development, the resolution. The challenge is what you engage, how you develop it, and then how you bring it together. And think about another kind of chunk. Think about a brief sample session with coaching or a brief coach the coach session, 15 minutes. Every segment, ideally, is a story. It has a beginning, middle, and end. That's a coaching story. It's not a parallel or just something lifted from a life story, but it's the challenge. What do you want to focus on? Where do you want to get to? The development of listening to and collaborating and co-creating. And then the end of how do you summarize that, and what will you commit to do? So it has a beginning, middle, and end. So a chunk is just the treatment of something that occurs to you that may be related and further the idea of your book. It may be something that you grab that little moleskin out of your cargo pants and write down something that you'll develop later. So your summary sentence?
Oh, my summary, I like the part when you were talking about understanding that what I seek is camouflaged in what I fear.
Yeah.
When the young lady just talked about the obstacles, that was very revealing for me and opened up my understanding more about what
you're
saying.
Great. Thank you. And one little story about why I ask for a summary, and you probably do this at the end of every coaching session, each of you, would you summarize the most important thing you're taking away, whether that's individual or coaching? and there's enthusiasm. Let me tell you why that is. Could I get a mute on the background noise, please?
That may be the dog on his leash.
Okay, I'm going to go back on lecture mode because I just want to conclude with this. Hold on one second. University of Waterloo did a study in which they asked two matched large groups of people to read a passage in a book. They each read the same passage. One group read it out loud. One group read it silently. They then gave the same test to everybody. The group that read it out loud did 40% better on the test. They put it in an output channel. They made it a complete story, which made it more retrievable and memorable as a story so that they could access it and had a kind of mastery over it. So think about that as you're looking at how you may want to summarize or look at for that chunk. What's your conclusion for that chunk that you've just written? I know we're out of time. Thank you for your participation. Thanks for all the things you've sent. I welcome any further questions, comments by email if it occurs to you. And I look forward to picking up right here next time when we look more at the neuroscience of writing. And I'll send that that white paper on the brain science of writing, of story. So thanks very, very much. Take good care of yourselves. Right here next week. See you guys. Bye now.